Hello.
This is number
0530.
The Stuff File Program.
With Peter Anthony Holder.
And it comes to you
right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0530. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, we remember the effervescent comedy genius that was Rip Taylor with a conversation from 2004. He explains how the confetti all started and how he thought his big TV break was actually going to be the end of his career.
I was doing 5x7 cards on my first Merv Griffin show, and I was going in the dumper. It was horrendous. They were not laughing. They didn't get me. They didn't understand me. So I just panicked, tore up the cards, threw it in the air, which became confetti, and I pulled Charo's Cascade wig off, pulled Van Johnson's shoes off, and threw them in the audience and knocked Merv Griffin's desk over and ran up the aisle because it was next door to Sardi's in New York and went to Sardi's and said, that's the end of my television career.
Sports columnist Larry Alex Taunton says that New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady is overrated.
To be clear, we're talking about degrees of greatness here, meaning I accept that Tom Brady is a great, not a good, not a mediocre quarterback. He's a great quarterback. What I'm arguing is that I don't think you can call him the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
John Patakis, author of 50 years working in criminal justice, talks about the college entrance exam scandal. Is it really a crime?
The crime is that it sets the wrong tone in general for the public, meaning that somebody who couldn't afford to donate that kind of money, their child probably wouldn't get into a college or university of that notoriety. So it's unfair to them. You know, it makes it look like the wealthier get a better shake in the system than somebody who's from a medium or lower income area. The court wants to set the tone that we're fair and reasonable, that that's an equitable system, and everybody should be treated fairly and equally when it comes to, you know, admissions.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0530, was actually nine people. Nine of my nieces and nephews. There is Khadija, Jordan, Yvette, D'Amica, Stephanie, Meshach, Ayanna, Malik, and Cheryl. Love you all. Thank you very much for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? At school football games, it's the tradition of the Maine Maritime Academy to fire a cannon when their team makes a touchdown. Their cannon is quite safe. It uses a blank shotgun shell to make a loud report on cue. But an alumnus brought his own cannon to make a louder bang for the team, which was playing the Massachusetts Maritime Academy. He couldn't bring it into the stadium, so when his team made a touchdown, the man, who hasn't been named pending possible criminal charges, fired his cannon from outside the fence near the end zone. He had loaded it with black powder and a substance that he had made into a wad. The alum apparently didn't think about his aim. The wadding hit a referee in the head with enough force that he collapsed and was taken to hospital. Maine lost, by the way, 42-21. And that was before the penalty for illegal use of a cannon. By the way, do you know anybody who has their own cannon? My next question is, why would someone actually have their own cannon? And where do you buy a cannon? And besides outside football end zones, how often does one get to fire their personal cannon? These are all pressing questions that really do need answers. A Memphis man was arrested after police said he lied about being carjacked so that he didn't have to tell his wife about his infidelity. Officers were called to a street where they met Anthony Thomas. The man claimed that two men carjacked him while he was sitting inside his vehicle. After running the license plate information, police discovered that the vehicle had actually been towed from another avenue several hours before Thomas claimed he was carjacked. Officers confronted him with the information, and that's when Thomas confessed to making the entire story up. He reportedly told authorities that he had lied so that his wife wouldn't learn about his infidelity. Thomas was charged with filing a false police report. He's going to want to do jail time. That would be a lot easier than having to go home to face the wrath of a woman scorned. And while we're on that topic, a woman called the Columbia County, Wisconsin Sheriff's Office to report that she'd received text messages and a call from her husband saying that he had been abducted. Deputies responded to the man's work and found 45-year-old Darryl Mole zip-tied to a chair. Mole allegedly said he had been attacked from behind, knocked unconscious, and woke up tied to the chair. He added that the suspect who attacked him made him call his wife and tell her to comply with their demands or he would be killed. Police couldn't find any other physical evidence, and Mole was suspiciously uninjured, and finally admitted later that he had lied and tied himself to the chair. He was arrested on charges of obstructing an officer and unlawful use of a phone. You know, he too might want to stay in jail because I'm guessing he has more to answer for to his wife than he does to the authorities. He might also have to sleep with one eye open in the future. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first segment here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, who keeps their crack pipe in their rear end, especially while riding a bicycle? Well, according to an arrest affidavit from the Indian River County Sheriff's Office, a 34-year-old woman from Vero Beach does. The apparent case of the cyclist with the drug pipe in her rectal area began at around 2:25 a.m. on September 26th. A deputy reported stopping the woman after spotting her on a bicycle without lights. She had a screwdriver in her front pocket. As I continued searching the woman, I was able to feel an item in between her buttocks, the affidavit states. You know, in general, the cramped vertical space between the buttocks is not commonly used to store items, and in particular, not things that are placed into the mouth. Anyway, meanwhile, the woman tried to touch the area in which I had felt the item, the affidavit states. The deputy reported the woman declined to follow instructions and eventually got taken down to the ground. That's when deputies reported plucking the crack pipe, which had black residue from the woman's posterior. Oh, I hope that black residue is from the crack pipe itself, otherwise she might have a serious medical condition. Anyway, she was arrested on charges including possession of drug paraphernalia and resisting arrest without violence. I know it sounds crass, but you don't get a pass when there's glass in your ass. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, let's get to our first segment here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The need for confetti has just gone down dramatically. Another Hollywood light has dimmed, and this one belongs to a most colorful character. Comic actor Charles Elmer Taylor Jr. was best known to us as Rip. Rip Taylor died on October 6th at the age of 88. To say that the flamboyant entertainer was exuberant would be an understatement. I had the pleasure of talking to Rip several times over the years. I thought I would share with you a segment from our very first conversation. It goes back to November of 2004. We had a chance to talk about his entire career, both in Hollywood and in Vegas, as we touched on his plans to play a small guest starring role on NBC's Will and Grace. Buckle up as we listen to just a part of that conversation now. You have been working in Vegas for years. You are
Yes, I think Lincoln something was. I remember him coming through here. It was quite some time, and I won Entertainer of the Year many times, and then I graduated from the lounges, like Rickles did, at the Sahara over to the main room, and then I've been ever since the main room. Yeah.
Now
it's wonderful, and I'm only Gamble talking to you, nobody else.
I grew up watching you on things like the Merv Griffin Show, on the Gong Show. Yeah. I used to watch you on.
Yeah, and my $1.98 Beauty Show. Don't forget that for Chuck Barron.
That's right, the $1.98 Beauty Show.
I wonder where I heard it.
And the thing I remember you most for, of course, is always having lots of confetti.
Yes, all the way to the bank, Peter. Remember this.
I'm sure the Teamsters must hate you because someone has to clean up after you.
No, let me tell you why they don't. They can't wait to get overtime and clean up the mess when I finish.
Okay.
I got you.
How did...
Please book Rip and have him bring more.
How did that whole thing start with the confetti?
Now here's the truth. Years ago, I was doing Merv Griffin the first time, and I have a terrible memory. It takes me a long time to memorize a play. Asked you about that one-man show. I just wrote it and I did it here, but let's come back to that.
Okay.
So I was doing 5x7 cards on my first Merv Griffin show, and I was going in the dumper. It was horrendous. They were not laughing. They didn't get me. They didn't understand me. So I just panicked, tore up the cards, threw it in the air, which became confetti, and then I pulled Charo's Cascade wig off, pulled Van Johnson's shoes off and threw them in the audience and knocked Merv Griffin's desk over, and ran up the aisle because it was next door to Sardi's in New York, and went to Sardi's and said, that's the end of my television career. But in those days, they showed it 2 weeks later, and when they showed it, the switchboard lit up like a Christmas tree, and they called me and said, get the guy that goes crazy. And when Merv called me, I said, I'm sorry, I'll pay for any damage. He says, do more. So when I went back, I would throw peanuts, and then I would throw candy. I would throw candy kisses at the audience. And still the jokes were terrible, and still are. But then one day I threw marshmallows at the audience, and they threw them back, Peter. They threw them back. Which means there was a rapport with the audience. And that's how that whole thing started.
I guess
it is all by accident.
I guess they say necessity is the mother of invention.
Well, whoever she is. But the point is, there's no proof.
There's no proof.
No, but it's true. Isn't that funny? It just happened by accident. I wrote a one-man show, and I did it here at the University in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Called It Ain't All Confetti. I'll bring it over to your town soon.
All right. Now, I'm going to ask you about that one-man show in just a few moments. But in the United States, which you got to admit is somewhat of a very litigious society, are you not concerned that someone, you know, even though you're hitting them with marshmallows and confetti, might want to sue?
Wait, let me get my dictionary. Litigious. Is that L-I-T? Yes, who cares? I need more publicity if they do. No, wait a minute, stop and think. They were bigger hams than I. They wanted to get on camera.
Right.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't wait to hit me with it.
Now, you're going to be on TV this Thursday, are you not?
This Thursday, yeah. Will and Grace, my first time. I waited 4 years to get on and finally got on. And it's during Sweeps Week. It's a very small part, Petey, but the point is I'm on a hit show in Sweeps Week on Will and Grace playing Rip Taylor. And when I got the script, I said to Jim Burrows, the director, who's brilliant, Jimmy, what's my motivation? He says, the check. They're all funny people. Lovely people to work with. Oh, my God. Marvelous.
Now, you say you waited 4 years to get on the show.
Yes, I wanted to get on in the beginning. I wanted to be his father. I wanted to be Karen's husband. I wanted to be the landlord. Anything, because it's a funny, written, wonderfully acted show.
So,
and they all said, oh, we love you, you'll be on. We love you, you'll be on. Debbie Reynolds was the mother. Debbie Reynolds and I do an act together to this day in our casinos when we had a hotel. You know that.
Right.
And so she's playing the mother. I can come on and be her volleyball partner. Oh, we'll find something. 4 years. I said, my God, I could have died waiting for you to find something.
So how did they come about the idea of you being yourself as opposed to...
I wish I knew. I would have done it sooner.
Now, Rip Taylor is also a fine actor who's done dramatic work as well.
Wow, I got a new offer. First of all, you're talking about Indecent Proposal with, to me, more Robert Redford.
That's right.
Oh, that was wonderful for me. But I did an audition last week with Nick Cassavetes, which is a new movie coming out with Bruce Willis and Sharon Stone and Courtney Cox, and I'd be the coroner if I get the part. They've already offered me the part, but I don't know if I can do it.
Now,
I'll let you know if I do.
Is there a problem when people come and, or I'm sure you have an agent you deal with getting scripts.
Yeah.
Is there a problem when...
If I die, 12 people are out of work and they can't talk to you, Holder.
Okay. Is there a problem when they say, you know, we have an actor that we want up for this part, it's Rip Taylor. Do they ever get that situation where they go, well, he's the comic, he's not an actor?
A lot. Now, here's how the Nick Cassavetes thing started. My agent, the casting director, was talking to Nick, and Nick said to the casting director, I want a Rip Taylor type.
Okay.
And the casting director said, well, why don't you get Rip Taylor? And Nick said, can he act? He said, look at the clip in Indecent Proposal, and that's how I got the offer.
Well, how did you get the role in Indecent Proposal?
Because Adrian Lyne, the director, who is brilliant, saw through the comic and the wig and said, take off the hat, meaning the wig, and do the lines, and that's how I did it, and it worked in three takes.
You know, you mentioned Rickles.
It's so flattering. Plus, I've done plays since, you know, right. Not War and Peace. Don't misunderstand me, mm-hmm. for God's sake.
You know, when I think of the role you had in Indecent Proposal, it reminds me, because you mentioned Rickles earlier.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the dramatic turn he did when I saw the movie when I was a kid. Was it The Rat Race?
I guess so, or Casino. He was good in that, too.
He was good in Casino, but in Rat Race, where you mentioned also Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie.
With Debbie Reynolds.
Yeah,
he was a horrible boss, and you thought, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
It shows a range that a lot of comics
have. And I both started in strip joints in Washington, D.C., coincidentally. Then I followed him in the lounge at the Sahara, coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're both in Vegas, coincidentally. He's a lovely man.
How did your career start?
Well, first of all, I was a page in the United States Senate. Then I got drafted in the Army, and I started doing record pantomime, and that's how I started. I worked strip joints all my life. And then somebody saw me and put me on the Ed Sullivan Show.
And, of course, Ed had you were the crying comedian?
Yes, I was, because he forgot my name the first show. I'm in the wings. He forgot my name. It's on the card. He couldn't see it. So I walk out, pull the hair from my nose, and a tear came down my face. I said, Rip Taylor. He said, of course you are. And I did all the jokes crying, and I was a crying comic. After that, I rang the bell, and the laugh-in took that. And then I threw confetti, and nobody's doing that. Then I did props forever, and somebody else is doing that, if you know who I mean.
Don't say
the word, I'll kill him. Mm-hmm. I'll cut my throat. Because
mm-hmm.
I called them, and I says, if you're going to do me and take things and do them, let me help you make it better. And they denied they were doing it. What am I, blind?
Yeah, that person you're referring to has been here.
Don't.
I won't mention his name.
Don't, because I'm not going to get in anything with him. It's just. But the sad thing is, they don't realize there's room for all of us.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The only thing I was going to say is that person's been here at Just for Laughs in Montreal. Have you thought of coming up to Montreal?
No, let me tell you why. I don't like comedy clubs because I don't do well. I think my humor would be too old or too dated for them because I'm funny, not dirty. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I have worked Montreal, one of my first jobs. As I mentioned before, please forgive it was a strip joint in Montreal. Can I mention the name? It was so long ago, it's probably closed.
Go ahead.
The Chez Paris.
Okay.
It was magnificent. I stayed at the Laurentian Hotel. I had such a marvelous time in Canada. God, mm-hmm. I loved it.
Okay.
And I tried to speak French and couldn't quite make it.
You want to know something?
What?
The strip club's still there. The hotel's gone.
Oh, my God. I closed bigger towns than that with my work, baby.
Okay. Your act is a very, although you mentioned one person, but your act is kind of hard to steal.
I'm quick. I'm out. Man my age doing this. I'm going to make a fool of myself, and that's all it is. I want to be foolish and a clown. And that's what I want to be, the Road Company Red Skelton. It's so flattering.
Okay.
I met him once.
You did say a man your age. So your act is very high energy, very high octane.
Yes, yes, yes.
Does it get tiring for a man your age?
No, it gets tiring when I'm waiting to go on. I want to get, I'm revved up, get that motor going, Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, I'm a ham bone, baby. You know, Peter, look in the mirror. Two of us are hams. That's all there is to it. I got three jokes, and I won't keep you.
Okay, go ahead.
The Jewish boy calls his mother, says, Mama, I met the girl I'm going to marry. Come to the house to meet her tomorrow. She goes to the house. Three girls sitting on the couch in the living room. He says, which one do you think I'm going to marry? Mama says, the redhead. He says, how'd you know? She says, because I hate her. The second one. The bum goes to the Jewish lady backstage, back door. I haven't eaten. Do you have any food? Would you mind eating yesterday's soup? Yes, I don't mind. Come back tomorrow. Here's the last. Peter, don't ever lose me. You're a good audience. I want you in the front when I'm working. Now, here's the next one. The guy goes, and this is my favorite in life. So silly. Guy walks in the library, says, librarian, do you have any books on suicide, please? She said, yes, aisle 6. He says, there are no books. She says, they never bring them back. Oh, it makes me pee. It's so silly. Jesus, God. Now, listen, you keep an eye. Watch me and tell all your friends to call Will and Grace and say, bring Rip back.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Would you like to do more either episodic or
yes,
sitcom?
I'm tired of traveling. I got too damn many things. The wigs are enough overweight.
How many? Okay, how many wigs do you have?
I have 125, and each one has a different name.
Now, why do you need 125 wigs?
People have to rinse. What are you nuts? These roots are dead.
Where do you call home, by the way?
I call legally, if you're with the IRS,
mm-hmm.
Nevada.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, listen, one more thing. What was I going to say? Oh, I sold my likeness to a slot machine company, and it's the old Match Game TV show. Remember that?
You're right.
Now, here's what it is. They're all over the country. They're starting to make more of them. There's 50 up against the wall. As you walk down the aisle in the casino, you hear me yelling, come over here. Scare the hell out of the poor people. They're penny machines, Peter, penny. And if you get three of me, confetti goes, and if you lose a quarter in a half hour, I say, would you move on? You're blocking the offer. I'm a big spender. So I'm not proud. You got to keep going.
You said seriously, if I was the IRS, your home is Nevada.
Yeah, in Las Vegas.
So seriously, does your driver's license say Charles Elmer Taylor on it?
It does, Melf. And tell Rip Torn what his real name is, too. Litigious, L-I-D-M-L-I-T-P-U something. I'll find it and call you.
Litigious. We're looking forward to seeing you on Thursday night on Will and Grace.
Very, very brief, so don't get upset if it's so short. But at least I'm on. That's all I care.
Yeah. And we missed, the gong show was...
Oh, yeah, we gang-gonged a lot of people, J.P. Morgan and I.
Mm-hmm.
We had more fun doing that show. Chuck is so wonderful. He was so wonderful to me. So that's why I got the $1.98 beauty show, if you remember.
Right. That was one show that unfortunately did not play a lot in our neck of the woods.
I think he's going to rerun it again. They have recently on the Comedy Channel.
I'll look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, please try.
Okay. And are you playing in Vegas these days besides?
Now, I'm here rewriting the show to take it, to peddle it to New York.
To New York.
Because there are so many one people shows opening in New York. You know, Opie's got one, Billy Crystal's got one, America Don's got one. Everybody's getting one man show because they're cheaper to perform.
All right.
So if I ever do, don't forget it's called It Ain't All Confetti.
It Ain't All Confetti.
That's the play.
So when are your memoirs coming out?
Well, that's what the play will be, isn't it? You know, you could even make that into a book, you know, if you wanted to.
Right.
You know what I mean. Then we go to your house for coffee.
I don't know. I don't know if I can handle all the confetti.
Well, three nuns are tearing it right now as we speak. I don't tear that crap. What are you, nuts? I got a show in April. I don't need to tear the paper, too. Jesus. Peter, think.
Okay.
The damn dictionary is written in French. I can't quite make it out.
By the way, our producer, Oliver, is still chuckling from the jokes you told him off air before we started tonight, so.
Well, Oliver's breath will knock you out over the phone, please. Jesus. Please.
Thank you, sir, for being on the program with us.
Thank you, and your listeners, thank you very much. And thank both of your listeners for having the patience to listen to me.
That was part of a conversation from November of 2004 with comedian Rip Taylor. Rip died on October 6th at the age of 88. Stuff File program fans, you can hear full versions of two conversations I had with Rip Taylor, this one from November of 2004 and another from February of 2009. Just go to our Patreon page and become one of the select patrons of the show. You'll hear more about the origins of Rip's career, his one-man show, his life in the Army, and more. Just go to patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's finger-licking good, if you're into that sort of thing.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the overrated Tom Brady, plus we'll discuss college entrance exam rigging and how those who are involved should be sentenced. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff, shall we? Officers responding to a report of an assault in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, when they arrived, the 53-year-old victim explained that he had gotten into an argument with a 23-year-old resident. The man said he'd walked away and had gotten into the elevator, and when the doors were about to close, he saw a woman's hand punch through the door, followed by a banana. The man reported that the banana hit him in the face and dirtied his T-shirt. Officers reported they could see a small amount of banana smudge on the man's shirt, but there was no visible marks on his face. The banana was not recovered, and its whereabouts were unknown, officers said. Well, maybe he got hungry waiting for the cops.
Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
A New Jersey man with a hankering for furry creatures is behind bars after he was accused of threatening farmers who denied him from making the moves on their barnyard animals. 31-year-old Richard Decker allegedly sent messages to farms and horse stables in Sussex County, New Jersey, in August of 2018, inquiring if he could have sexual relations with their barn animals, specifically cows and or horses. Well, you know, at least he's polite enough to ask. After being denied some animal lovin', Decker reportedly began harassing the farmers, sending them threatening messages and leaving homemade metal spikes in their driveways to deflate the tires on their vehicles. In one instance, Decker allegedly threatened to beat a farmer's wife with a wooden stick. An arrest report noted several farm owners had their vehicles' tires damaged by metal spikes. Decker was arrested on October 3rd. When they searched the man's home, cops found a homemade .22 caliber firearm, arrows with explosives and flash powder attached, along with spikes similar to those found on the farms. The man is facing 22 indictable offenses. Decker was ordered held with no bail pending a trial in November. Here's an idea. How about adding a psych evaluation to the list? I mean, this is a guy who clearly doesn't know the actual meaning of the term animal husbandry. I'm also guessing that his constant request for some animal lovin' is a sign that this is not necessarily an act he's previously unfamiliar with. I'm just shaking my head and remembering what my grandmother used to say, "It takes all kinds to make a world." And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, authorities say a New York woman who crashed her car into a Long Island firehouse was found to be in possession of marijuana and a stolen snake. Nassau County police say 22-year-old Sarah Espinoza of Albany was driving on Jericho Turnpike when she crossed the median and collided with a vehicle. They say she continued through the front door of the new Hyde Park firehouse and hit two fire trucks. Fire personnel found that the small ball python she had stolen had wrapped itself around her neck. Authorities say the snake was stolen from a nearby pet store before the accident. Espinoza was arraigned on charges including petty larceny, reckless endangerment, and driving while intoxicated. Well, she stole a small ball python. Well, that was a big mistake. Everybody knows that the only thing that should go around your neck is a boa. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? NFL quarterback Tom Brady is often referred to as the GOAT, meaning greatest of all time, but is he really? That's the question that was asked by freelance columnist Larry Alex Taunton, who has written a column in the American Spectator that lists five reasons why quarterback Tom Brady is overrated. Larry joins us now on the line from Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Larry.
How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. First off, I got to ask, do you actually have to take security with you the minute you land at Logan?
You know, I am currently wearing those glasses, you know, that have the nose, the false nose on them. And I'm moving around, and people think I'm Groucho Marx, but they don't think that I'm Larry Alex Torrance. So that's a good thing.
Why did you decide to write a column touting the idea that Tom Brady might be overrated?
Well, I'm a huge football fan. I live here in Birmingham, Alabama. Football is in our DNA here, and there are certain things that if you're from Birmingham, Alabama, you just don't have a choice about. And barbecue and football are two of them. And so I watch an awful lot of college and pro baseball. And to be clear, we're talking about degrees of greatness here, meaning I accept that Tom Brady is a great, not a good, not a mediocre quarterback. He's a great quarterback. What I'm arguing is that I don't think you can call him the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
And why do you say that? By the way, I completely agree with everything you've said, because I don't deny that he is a great quarterback, but to say greatest of all time, I have some doubts as well. But go ahead.
Well, let me just give you, I don't know about your listeners, and they'll be of various age, and some will remember some of the quarterbacks that I refer to. But let's take an extreme example, Archie Manning. When I was a kid, my dad maintained he was one of the greatest quarterbacks he ever saw. At Ole Miss, he certainly was. He is drafted by the worst franchise in the NFL at the time, the New Orleans Saints, and he is condemned to obscurity for the rest of his career. There was no free agency in those days. He had a terrible offensive line, and yet he still had a respectable career, but he was not fortunate enough to land with a franchise, let's say like the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, at that time, where his talents might have really been on display, or where he had a great coach. So part of the argument that I'm making here is that the quarterback position is not like talking about a sprinter, where your individual performance determines the outcome. A quarterback's performance is dependent upon loads of factors that he simply has no control over. His offensive line, for instance, is hugely important. His running game. You know, Dan Marino had a great offensive line, never had a good running game for his entire career. So he was a guy who had to go in and throw it 45 times a game. It's dependent upon your coaching. It's dependent upon the conference that you're in. So in half of the game, the quarterback is on the bench. So the defense is the other part of the team. I mean, look at Brady this last week, you know, in playing the Jets. The Buffalo Bills. The Bills were atrocious in that game. But their defense shut down Brady's and the Patriots' offense, but it didn't matter because the Patriots' defense was good enough to keep the Buffalo Bills from winning that game. So Brady has enjoyed an extraordinary array of those uncontrollable factors that a lot of other quarterbacks have never had.
I got to let you know right now that you're speaking to the choir when you're talking to me, because I was a fan of the Aints back when the senior Manning was the quarterback,
what a talent he was.
Yes, absolutely. And when I mentioned that,
and how wasted he was with a team like that.
Yeah, when I mention that myself to friends who say, "Well, who do you think was one of the great quarterbacks?" I always say, I always make a joke by saying, "Oh, it's a Manning," and of course they think I'm talking about one of his two sons, and I'm going, "No, Archie."
Archie was fabulous.
Yep.
And there's another thing here. Your knowledge of the game is deeper and older than most. Another major factor here in this, and probably the most important factor in talking about the GOAT. And by the way, I should say, I don't think any quarterback can be called the GOAT for this reason. The game has evolved hugely and the rules have been changed to tilt in the direction of high-scoring offenses to make them like Madden video games. You saw the hit that Vontaze Burfict put on a Dallas Cowboy this past week. He's suspended for the season. Now, that hit doesn't look particularly vicious if you want to go back and watch the hits that guys like Jack Tatum, Jack Ham, Dick Butkus, those guys destroyed quarterbacks. They were rewarded and celebrated for doing so. The rules allowed it. Now you hit a quarterback in the head, it's a 15-yard penalty, and you might be ejected from the game. So quarterbacks enjoy a certain kind of endangered species status that they didn't enjoy in pass and a past. And also the receivers, you know, the pass interference calls are far more numerous now than they were in those days.
I have a feeling that when we talk about quarterbacks as being great, I think we are right now witnessing somebody who down the road could be looked back at as someone who is one of the greatest, only because he seems to be transforming the role of quarterback. And by that, I mean, I'm talking about Patrick Mahomes. I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of kids now who are growing up who will become Patrick Mahomes type quarterbacks, and we'll see that 15, 20 years into the future.
Boy, isn't that guy amazing? He really is. He's a guy that he's so incredibly athletic. His father was a professional baseball player, raised him to become a professional baseball player, and all of a sudden his kid decided he liked football more. And great for us, because whenever I know he's on TV, I want to watch it, because he's the Michael Jordan of the quarterback position. What he does is so graceful and so remarkable that you just got to watch it. And I have to agree with you. If he's able to stay healthy and have a lengthy career, this guy is going to put up video game type numbers.
And you see, I'm here in Canada, so I would say he's the Wayne Gretzky of football.
Okay. Well, listen, my mother's a Canadian, so even though I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, I grew up hearing an awful lot about Wayne Gretzky from my Canadian relatives, and I think that's a very good comparison.
And I also think one of the things, and I want to tout your article again, because it's a great article. It's a well-balanced, well-thought-out article, and you give five reasons as to why Tom Brady is overrated, but you're not dissing Tom Brady. And one of the things you mention is the fact that people watch, look at players, and only look at the players in the era of which they are big fans of the game. And, for instance, yeah. I look at myself, I'm primarily more of a baseball fan than I was a football fan growing up. And I always mention the fact that even though I saw some great baseball players in my lifetime, I can understand how someone would say that a Babe Ruth is one of the greatest of all times. And I could also debate the argument that Lou Gehrig is not, only because his career was cut short by illness.
Yeah, we have a tendency, our memories are short, and we love hyperbole. I mean, right now, the conversation around weather is full of this. The worst storm ever. Ever. And I think to myself, okay, well, there's millennia of history. We're going to say ever? Well, what maybe we really mean by that is it's the worst in memory, or maybe since records on weather were kept in the 1880s. We love to say things like he's the greatest ever, the fastest human being ever, as has been said of Usain Bolt. Well, no, he's the fastest in the 100-meter sprint since records have been kept with laser clocks and time clocks. And, we have no idea, centuries ago, who are all the people who are running. And so we tend to speak in hyperbole. And it's important that we recognize, as I say in my piece, Bo Jackson, and I say this as an Alabama fan, Bo Jackson, who was on, you know, the much-hated, you know, Auburn Tigers, is the greatest running back I ever saw. Now, he won't be in the Hall of Fame. His career wasn't particularly long, and his records will never reflect that. I never in my life saw a guy that big, that strong, run that fast. Just incredible. Hmm. Well, my father would always say to me, well, he's great, but you should have seen Jim Brown, and yes, you should have seen Gale Sayers. Well, of course, I never did see those guys. And so my inclination was to speak in hyperbole that Bo Jackson is the greatest ever. Well, you know, that's only because that's what I happen to see and happen to know, and put Herschel Walker up there as well. So I think we have to kind of rein in the greatest of all time kind of talk, because the game has changed. The game is long. The rules of, you know, comparing Brett Favre, say, to Bart Starr, you're comparing two different things. It's apples and oranges.
Having said that, and we've got less than a minute here, can we state that Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time?
Oh, boy, I think we're even getting into more dicey area when we start talking the greatest coaches of all time. I would just want to say that he is one of the greatest of all time. There's no doubt one of the greatest defensive minds. And that has been what the beauty of the pairing of Brady and Belichick has been, that you bring a great defensive mind with a guy who is, by the way, as I argue in my article, I think Tom Brady is one of the smartest quarterbacks of all time. He takes care of himself. He runs out of bounds. He throws away the ball. He gets down. He does not feel the need to take on linebackers and defensive backs. That's smart. And together, those guys have dominated the sport.
Alex, it's been a pleasure to talk to you again. It's a great article. The article is entitled Five Reasons Why Tom Brady is Overrated. It is in the American Spectator. I'll put a link into it from on our show so that people can read it if they haven't seen it. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Hey, great. And send people to LarryAlexTaunton.com. Thanks so much.
Freelance columnist Larry Alex Taunton, who has written a column in the American Spectator that lists five reasons why quarterback Tom Brady is overrated. You can go to my website at thestuffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0530, and you'll find the link to the article in the American Spectator. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
On the air on stations in Singapore, New Zealand, and America, and streaming through your computer. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about college entrance exam rigging. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. But I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify. Police were called to an IHOP restaurant in Asheville, North Carolina on September 26th after a group of patrons lost their composure when told their orange juice refills weren't free. Authorities say the customers damaged the restaurant and assaulted its manager and another employee. Police are examining surveillance video in an effort to identify all of the suspects. Yeah, I'm sure once they're all captured, the cops will, you know, put the squeeze on them. But not too much. You don't want to beat them to a pulp. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff All program, shall we? Sentencing has begun for parents who pleaded guilty to using their wealth to boost their children's chances of getting into the right college in the U.S. You may recall that they allegedly paid to rig entrance exam scores and securing athletic recruit status through bribery. Now, some of those parents are using their considerable resources to boost their own chances of getting a lenient sentence. Joining us to talk about this is John Patakis. He's a criminal justice, parole, probation, and sentencing specialist. He's also the author of 50 Years Working in Criminal Justice. He joins us via Skype from New Jersey. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning, Peter. Good to be with you.
Thanks for being on the program with us. One of the first things I wanted to ask about this, since you are a specialist in this and you know your stuff, what exactly is the crime committed here? And the reason why I ask that question is that how is it different from all of those other people who are very, very wealthy who get buildings with their names on it and their kids get into school?
Well, I mean, you know, the crime is that it sets the wrong tone in general for the public, meaning that somebody who couldn't afford to donate that kind of money, their child probably wouldn't get into a college or university of that notoriety. So it's unfair to them. And, you know, it makes it look like the wealthier get a better shake in the system than somebody who's from a medium or lower income area. And, you know, the court wants to set the tone that we're fair and reasonable, that it's that's an equitable system, and everybody should be treated fairly and equally when it comes to, you know, admissions.
Since this is a crime, we're often talking about the perpetrator of that crime being the parent involved here. Aren't there three people on this chain? Isn't there a situation where somebody's facilitating this opportunity and schools turning a blind eye to something that clearly has been going on for a long period of time?
Well, you know, sometime it was a consultant for the college or university, and sometime even a staff member in a different department or whatever, they're going to get something out of it. And, you know, you're right, probably in some situations, maybe the hierarchy in the university or college knows about it. But if it means a large donation from some other building or some other program that they couldn't afford otherwise, I guess in their mind, they look at it like, well, you know, even though this is something inappropriate and illegal, if it can help the university to get additional resources, you know. So obviously that person from the university who okayed it and maybe orchestrated it with, you know, some other either professor or staff member there or even an outside consultant will be held responsible. The system is looking a lot closer now at white-collar crimes, which this falls into that category. Pretty much it appears that all these individuals that were involved for their children, I don't believe had any kind of prior criminal record. So that puts them in that category of, you know, the white, you know, type of crime that is considered, you know, white collar crime.
Okay, I go back to my original question, though. Again, we see many universities with alumni names on buildings, edifices of all kind, and their kids get in. To my knowledge, that still is not illegal.
No, it's not illegal, but that happened at a university I was involved with. An individual who was a CEO of a company donated a lot of money. A building was put up in his honor. Later on, it was found out that he was guilty of orchestrating some money illegally or whatever. They took down the plaque or whatever. Well, they didn't destroy the building, but they took down the name and memorial setting of, you know, his name and what he had donated or whatever. So it doesn't set the right image for the university. And the university's defense would be, well, we didn't know that this individual was involved in something illegal. So they want to make sure that their reputation, in most cases, I would think, you know, is not tattered by that, because that could affect future enrollments. I mean, marketing is a big part of any college or university to welcome students and increase, you know, their student attendance. So to keep up their reputation, they should be in favor of, you know, making sure they have a clear and reputable record.
Let's talk about some of the people who have actually been found guilty, or actually, I guess they pleaded guilty to the situation. Actress Felicity Huffman was sentenced to 14 days in jail. There was also some other people. Wealthy California vintner was sentenced to 5 months in prison. Augustin Junius. Do you feel that these sentences are fair?
You know, you have to keep in mind. Now, a judge has a certain amount of latitude. They can go at the lower end or they can go at the higher end. All right. There are usually guidelines that kind of try to keep them in within that certain range. Okay. Unless it's something unusual, they can go outside the guidelines. Okay. So when you say fair, there's a number of things that come into consideration. The offense, the person's background, their attitude. Are they showing remorse? Which I think one of the first ones was very apologetic, Huffman, and crying during the thing and apologetic. So their attitude plays into it. Okay. Also keep in mind the philosophy of the judge. I worked with about 10 different judges when I was working for the courts. You know, look, they all have somewhat different personalities. And meaning that if I get elected to be a judge, well, you know, I bring along my cultural background, my philosophy on how things should be handled. And so a judge can go to the lower end or the higher. And I've seen that over the years when I worked in the courts. So, again, their relationship or their personality and their background plays into it. When you say fair, you know, he could have gone higher in that particular case. But the other thing they consider is this person a danger, a violent type of person, a risk to society in some violent kind of way? OK, and I don't think she was or most of the others are. Yes, they did the white collar crime and the money thing. So that plays into perhaps a lesser sentence. OK, community service, which I believe they're all getting. That's a good alternative because it is part punitive. When a sentence is given by a judge, they're to look at two things, the punitive end and the rehabilitative end. Okay, so part of the punishment, and the punishment can be more than just jail or prison. It can be put you on electronic monitoring, home detention, community service even to some extent is a form of punishment. You have to do 300 hours of certain types of perhaps laborious type of things or picking up trash or whatever, or other type of things like, you know, donating your time. So that does take some time. Probably the biggest penalty is you're now a convicted person. You know, your reputation is tainted considerably, you know.
And in some cases, I would assume also your travel opportunities, because sometimes you cannot travel where you want to go beyond the borders of the United States if you have something on your record like that.
Well, okay, depends on the more serious cases and usually dangerous cases, they'll confiscate your passport if they think you might be a flight risk, okay? But again, now keep in mind, I believe they all got probation so far. Now, if you're on probation, you can't leave your state without permission, okay? You have to report to a probation officer, so you're not permitted, or it's considered a violation if you do. And if you violate probation, then you come back to court for resentencing, all right? And usually the judge is going to be more punitive that next time because here he felt or she felt they gave you somewhat of a break by keeping you in the community and reporting to a probation officer. And now if you violate that, well, what's the next step? Mm-hmm. Most likely it's going to be some type of incarceration. I guess it depends on who you ask whether it was fair. People who knew her very well and she had no prior record and are sympathetic would say, well, I think that might be fair. Somebody else might look at it and say, geez, my kid couldn't get into college or whatever. She should have got a longer punitive sentence. Okay.
Well, we just got about a minute. Let's talk about the kids in this case. Those who are in school, those who may have already graduated, should they be stripped of their degrees?
Well, that's a university decision. If they did all the acceptable or academic requirements and they satisfactorily completed them, and were they not aware of that or whatever, that would be a case-by-case basis, I would think, from college and university. Or they may make them make up some of the work or give them additional credits that they have to make up. So, yeah, that would depend on the individual college or university. You know, I'm not sure if there's any exact policy on that, you know. But again, it goes back to what does the public think is fair, you know. And the public's opinion is important to a certain extent. As a sentencing judge, People expect you to be fair, reasonable, you know, and certainly above the law yourself. So you owe a certain amount to the community to make sure that your sentence reflects that perception, you know.
Well, we haven't heard the end of this because there are more cases to come along. As of the moment, as we speak at press time, Lori Loughlin has decided that she is going to fight this rather than plead guilty, and as a result could face some serious charges or serious time, because time is higher when you go through the courts as opposed to taking a plea deal. So we'll have to see how this plays itself out. Your book is called 50 Years Working in Criminal Justice. John, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
John Patakis, author of 50 Years Working in Criminal Justice. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0530, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Pueblo, Colorado police say a man who wanted to make a theft report for a prostitute stealing his wallet is now facing a criminal charge himself. PPD posted about the exchange on Facebook, saying the man picked up a prostitute on late Wednesday and wasn't happy about her stealing his wallet afterward. Officers took the theft report, but then informed the caller that he would be charged for picking up a prostitute. Pueblo police did issue a warning online to other would-be criminals who are targeted by another crime. You don't get a free pass because you became the victim of an offense while you're committing an offense. Well, they said it best, but I still have to say myself, why? Oh, why? If you're engaging in an illegal act with a hooker, would you then call the cops because your wallet was lifted? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0530. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0530. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep environmental thought. If we don't do something about global warming soon, eventually there won't be any ice floes left to put our elders on.